There we go.
Okay, this is the Festal Shia, the Ilu Nishmot and Ephraim Shmuel ben Avraham Arya Cohen, and Chaya Tolobas Eliezer Mendel HaCohen, and also dedicated to the soldiers of Tzahal who are out in the field defending us. And with God's help, victory as soon as possible. And let's pick up where we left off in chapter 16 of Yechezkel, in verse 5. This chapter, as we know, is an allegory, or certainly the first part of it is an allegory to the birth of the Jewish people. God's describing the birth of the Jewish people in allegorical terms. The fact that just like a foundling, a newborn baby girl who is tossed into the field straight after birth, God found the Jewish people. Last week we discussed the fact that this newborn child was found with the umbilical cord still attached, and meaning that the Jewish people were still, or the Israelites as they were then, were still heavily connected to the culture of the Egyptians. The baby was found with still the blood of her birth all over her. All the gore and blood of birth was all over, indicating that the Jewish people had no real merit to be redeemed, and the fact that the child hadn't been, that was the idea that the child hadn't been washed. Then we had the idea that the child hadn't been salted, which we discussed in great detail. The idea of salting is to give the child's body some strength. And finally, the fact that the child, what was the fourth thing? The fact that the child wasn't swaddled, meaning that the child hadn't had its body shaped properly. It wasn't fit, wasn't strong enough to endure what was coming next for it, which was indicative of the fact that the Jewish people weren't ready at the time that God decided to redeem them. They weren't ready yet to go out into the big wide world and become the nation they were supposed to be. So that was God describing last week the state that he found this newborn child in the field, bloodied, unwrapped, naked, and still attached to the culture of Egypt. And so that takes us into verse 5 in the continuation of this allegory, which will take us through really through the whole of Jewish history.
What do you want to stop for?
Which is really, it's going to be a fascinating little journey. But God says now in verse 5, Lo chotra alayich ayin. No eye, you were in the field lying there, naked baby, no eye pitied you enough. Nobody had enough mercy upon you or compassion on you to do any of the four things that we just described that are necessary for a child. And you were thrown out into the open field, with your body lying rejected by Yom who led us off on the day that you were born. Again, no eye pitied you, no one did anything for you, no one had any compassion for you, you were just thrown out into the field, your body lying rejected, just as you were on the day you were born. Now, so again, before discussing the pshat, really the simple meaning of the verse, and obviously it's allegorical interpretation, it's really time to take a look at this weird and wonderful medrash from Shemos regarding the state of the Jewish people at the time that they were in Egypt. And this medrash is in Shemos Rabbah, and the medrash says like this. Rabbi Yehuda says like this, Mi Omra Klus LaKadosh Baruch Hu, who sang out and acclaimed God? Very strange introduction to a medrash. So the medrash says it was the Jewish children of Egypt, because when Israel were in Egypt and one of the Israelite women was due to give birth, she would go out to an abandoned field and give birth there. When she gave birth there, she would leave her baby in the hands of God and say, Ribono Shel Olam, Ani Osisi Es Sheli V'Ata Asei Es Shelo. Master of the universe, I did my duty having a child. Now it's your turn to take care of him. And Rabbi Yochanan says, immediately, God would descend, cut the umbilical cord, bathe them, and smear them with oil. Just notice that the Medrash replaces the idea of salting with the idea of oiling the child. And the Medrash says, that's why Yechezkel says here in our verse, Ratush lechi el penei hasoda bin ol nafshei v'yom huledes osos. That you are thrown out into the open field, your body lying rejected as on the day you were born. And the Medrash says God would place two stones in the baby's hand, one in which he could suckle honey and olive oil, and one with which he could suckle milk. And these children would grow up in the abandoned field, protected by God. When they had fully grown, they would return to the houses of their fathers, who would ask them, who looked after you all these years? And they would say, a handsome young man descended from above and provided for all our needs. As it says in Shir HaShirim, Dol Ditzach V'Odom Dugul Nirvovo, my beloved, my God, is clear-skinned and ruddy, more eminent than a thousand men. And when Israel arrived at the Reed Sea, at the Yam Suf, for the crossing of the Red Sea, those same children were there, and they saw God at the sea, splitting the Red Sea. They began saying to their fathers, this is the one who was providing nourishment for us when we were in Egypt. As it says in the Shira, in the Song of the Sea, Zer Eli V'Amveihu, the children would point to God and say with recognition, this is the one. This is God who saved us, and we will glorify him. Very, very strange medrash on this pasuk. But the idea is that the Egyptians wanted to kill the children, particularly the boys, and God made sure, as we'll see later on in the story, God made sure that the children were saved, or most of the children were saved. So that's just a little medrash. A very strange medrash introducing this verse. But now let's just get to the pshat, the simple meaning of this verse, and its allegory and its parable. God starts off by saying, Lo chosa, olayich ayin lasos lo achas me'ela. No one pitied you enough to do for you any of the four things that a newborn baby requires. No one cut the umbilical cord. No one washed you off. No one oiled you or salted you. And no one swaddled you. And God uses the language of chus here, lo chos olai, no one had chus on you. Now remember, we've discussed this before, that the meaning of the word chus is this. When you care about something or someone because they are inherently valuable and you are concerned that it or this person shouldn't go to waste, shouldn't be wasted, and that benefit and potential would be lost, that is called chus. This is all about value, that you have some type of mercy, pity on something or someone because of the value that they possess, their inherent value. And you're concerned that value shouldn't go to waste. Example, you see a beautiful Da Vinci in the Louvre, it's natural that you wouldn't like to see it destroyed, because even though it's got no intrinsic value to you, because you don't own it, nevertheless, it does have an extrinsic value, and that it is inherently irreplaceable as an objet d'art, as a valuable piece of art. That is chus. That is chus. Similarly, when a great doctor or a great surgeon is incapacitated and can no longer perform surgery that will save lives, it's natural to have chus on the basis that this person's skilled to have empathy, sympathy with the fact that this person's skills were so valuable and are now being lost to humanity. So the message of the first statement here, when God says, Lo chosa olayich ayin, lasos loch achas me'ele, no one pitied you enough to do for you any of the four things that are required to treat or deal with a newborn child, Maglev, but Paro, talking about Paro, Paro didn't have any hoofs. So he saw no value. He saw no value in Jews. He saw no added value to the male Jewish babies. And as a result of that, he ordered that they be thrown into the river or thrown into the sea to be killed. So that's what it means, lo koso alayah ayi, that the Egyptians didn't see any value in Jews, which, you know, that's something that we've, that attitude of non-Jews has survived until today, as we saw on October the 7th. But people, the enemies of the Jewish people, see no value in the lives of the Jewish people. And then God says something else. He says, L'chum la'olayim. Not only did the Egyptian, or not only did Pharaoh not not have any hood, not see you as a people that added any value, but the Egyptians had no chamla on you either. again, a reminder, chamla is when you care about somebody or something, not because it has benefit or value, that's hood, as we just explained, not on the basis of one's feelings of pity or empathy to another human being, which is rachamim. Chamla is something completely different. Chamla is really saying the situation of this person or these people finds themselves, himself or themselves in, bothers me intellectually. Chamla is not like chus. Chamla will apply to something for which one has got no use, one no utility or no value. Just that one intellectually decides that it should not be destroyed and its survival would be better. Chamla relates to the feeling of pity that is essentially an intellectual argument. But in addition to the fact that the Egyptians had no chus, they saw no value in Jewish life, the Egyptians had no feeling of chamla either. They couldn't even intellectually come to the conclusion that human life was valuable. And no human life was valuable. They just couldn't deal with that concept that human life was cheap. Forgetting the fact that they didn't consider the Jewish life to have any value, they didn't consider any life to have any value. So he said, so what did they do with you? So they threw you into the open field, your body lying rejected, like on the day you were born. And the allegory, the parable is clear, as the Malvin says, Uber Nimshel. And the Nimshel, the parable, the understanding here we have to have is about the way the Egyptians treated the Jewish people. They treated you like throwaways. They first forced you into serving them in their fields with hard labor, as the Torah says, by immoral esayim. We're coming up with this is the stuff we've just been doing in the last few weeks of the parishes. By immoral esayim, by avodah kasha, they embittered your lives with hard labor, with clay and with bricks, with the avodah sasada, and with all kinds of hard work in the fields. Eif kol avodah somasha otu v'hem before us. And all the work they forced upon you, it was backbreaking work. They just threw you into the fields, and if you died, you died. So there's plenty more. The Jewish people reproduce at a tremendous rate, so there's plenty more. It's like the old idea. If you have a look at the expansion in China of their road system and how quickly that was done, you'll see that, you know, they could build a road that was 1,000 miles long in a year because, you know, there's no shortage of coolies. There's no shortage of young Chinamen who they can send out to work 16, 17 hours a day. And if they drop dead, so they drop dead. There's plenty more where that came from. So this is the idea of Atushlachi Al-Tamei Asoda, the gold mass sheikh. They threw you into the open field. Now, they didn't care if you lived or died. If you can get your work done, you can live another day. And if you couldn't get your work done, so you die. So you drop dead in the field. Who cares? And so that is where God finds them, like an abandoned baby, bloody, filthy, starving, crying from the work they were forced to do for their enslavers, and they had no one to turn to for help. No one was interested in helping them. And at this point, a kindly gentleman passes by in the field and sees the abandoned baby, or as the marshal goes, God passed by and saw the abandoned nation condemned to this type of starving slave life. And here we have one of the most famous psukim in the whole of the Tanakh. You'll know it from the Brit Milah, and you'll know it from the Haggadah. There are plenty of verses in this chapter that you'll recognize immediately. This is one of them. This is a verse, again, the verse we say, it's the Brit Milah, and we repeat it in the Haggadah on Pesach. What God says, Vayevara Laya, and I happened to pass by you. Vayereh, Vayereh, and I saw you. Misbosefet, downtrodden, the Domayich, in your own birth blood. Vamaloch, and I said to you, the Domayich Hayi, in your blood you will live. Vamaloch, and I said to you, the Domayich Hayi, in your blood you will live. Now, this is a very famous pasuk, and again, everyone's heard this pasuk, anyone who's ever been to a Brit, anyone who's ever been to a Seder night will know this verse. What does it mean? Obviously, you know, as a Brit, you don't have questions, what's it all about? In your blood you shall live, in your blood you shall live. Why does he repeat it? What does he mean? You shall live through blood. So this is a continuation of Ezekiel's allegory. The gentle stranger, otherwise known as God, passed by this abandoned baby girl, otherwise known as the nation of Israel, lying defenseless, subjugated, enslaved, and wallowing in her own birth blood, wallowing in her own avarice, in her connection to the Egyptian culture. And the gentle stranger God took pity on her, and he said, I passed by you, and I saw you downtrodden in your own birth blood. And Rashi says here, what does this first part of this verse mean? As God passed by you, completely helpless and covered in blood, I recalled the covenant, the bris, of your forefathers. On that basis, I decided to redeem you, because I knew how you were being oppressed and demoralized in your period of slavery in Egypt. So I said to you, V'omaloch, I said to you, V'domai chayi, V'omaloch, V'domai chayi. I said to you twice, in your blood you shall live, and in your blood you shall live. Meaning that God was prepared to save Israel for two reasons. The two reasons that have got something to do with blood. V'domai chayi, with the blood of the Brit Milah, something that the Jews kept since the time of Avraham Avinu, since the time that Abraham was first had his Brit Milah. That was one thing that the Jews, or the Israelites, or they weren't even Israelites at this time, they were Ivrim. They were Eved Ivrim. They were Jewish, Hebrew slaves. Something that the Ivrim, the Hebrews, had been keeping since the time of Abraham, which is the blood of the Brit Milah. That's the Damai Chayi, the first one. And God says, I will redeem you as a result of that. And the second one, the Damai Chayi, I will redeem you with the blood of the Korban Pesach that God knew that they were about to bring. That was the exit strategy, or the exit out of Egypt. But the night that God passed over, they prepared the Korban Pesach, and they put the blood of the Korban Pesach on their doorposts, and God passed over Pesach. God passed over, and so based on those two bloods, the blood of the Brit Milah and the blood of the Korban Pesach, says God, you've got nothing else going for you apart from those two things, but based on those two things, I'll redeem you. And that's the opinion of the Gemara in Tweezers on that test, what I've just told you. The Damai Chayim, that refers to the Brit Milah, the blood of the Brit Milah, and the blood of the carbon paper, which is why we say this pasuk at the Brit Milah, and why we say this pasuk in the Haggadah, on the first night of day, on the Seder night. So those are the two mitzvahs that the Jewish people had in their, the only two mitzvahs that the Jewish people had in their pockets that made them worthy of being redeemed, being picked up by the stranger that walked by them as they were enslaved. Hazal here, they go on to ask the following question. What's so special about these two mitzvahs? What's so special about the mitzvah of Brit Milah and the mitzvah of Korban Pesach that warrant redemption? Now, it should be mentioned before I give you the answer that there are 365 negative commandments in the Torah, and there are 248 positive ones. For every one of the 365 negative commandments in the Torah, there's a punishment if you break them. If you break Shabbos, there's a punishment. If you eat trace, there's a punishment. If you kill someone, there's a punishment. If you worship Allah, there's a punishment. If you injure somebody, there's a price to pay. For every one of the 365 negative commandments, there's a price to pay. There's a bill. However, when we come to the 248 positive commandments, there's no major punishment for not doing the positive ones. In other words, if you don't blow shofar on Rosh Hashanah, so the Torah doesn't tell you, well, if you don't blow shofar on Rosh Hashanah, you're going to get malchus, or you're going to be executed. There's none of that. There are only two mitzvahs, I say. There are only two positive commandments in the Torah, for which are considered to be capital crimes. So, crimes worthy of death. One is if a Jewish child does not have a bris milah, and one is if a Jewish person is not involved in bringing the Korban Pesach. So that, for those two positive commandments, they both carry the death penalty. And they're the only ones. So again, Chazal asked the question, God decided to redeem the Jewish people on the Domai Chayi, based on these two mitzvahs that the Jewish people, one they already kept, and one they were about to keep, with the blood of the Korban Pesach, just before they were redeemed. So Chazal asked the question, what's so special about it? Well, let me just mute everyone again. Yeah. So Chazal asked the question, what's so special about these two mitzvahs, Brit Milah and Korban Pesach, that warrant redemption? And Chazal say like this, Brit Milah and Korban Pesach are equivalent to all 613 mitzvahs in the Torah. And Chazal say that there is numerical allusion to the importance of Brit Milah in the word Brit itself. The word Brit itself has got a gematria of, well, we can work it out, Brit. Bez is 2, Resh is 200, that's 202, Yud is 10, that's 212, and Taf is 400, that's 612. So that's the Brit Milah is worth 612. When you add to that the extra mitzvah of the Korban Pesach, you've got 613. And that's one way of doing the math. So circumcision and Korban Pesach are equal to all the commandments, all the mitzvahs, all 613 mitzvahs in the Torah. Similarly, the Korban Pesach is equal to 613 mitzvahs itself. By reference to its gematria as well, as is pointed out by the Ben Yoda here, the Yesh Bazer Remez Shemilas Pesach, the word Pesach, Bimil O'o. If you take the letters of the word Pesach and you expand the letters so that the Pei becomes Pehe, and the Samach becomes Samach Menka, reading the word Samach, and the Ches becomes Chet. So you've got Peh, Samach, Chet. So if you expand out the letters of the word Pesach, so you get the letter Peh, which is made up of a Peh and a Hey, Peh, which has got a gematria of 85. You've got the word Samach, which is Samach Mem Kah, which is a gematria of 120. And you've got the word letter Chet, which is Chet Tah, which is a gematria of 408. So you've got 85 and 120, which is 205, and 408 for the last letter PEP, which is 613. So, all in all, if you add up the fully expanded numerical values of the letters of the word Pesach, Pes, Samach, and Ches, it equals the numerical value of 613. So that's like really a Kabbalistic, more of a Kabbalistic reason why these two mitzvahs warranted redemption, why the Jews were redeemed based on the blood of the Bris Milah and the blood of the Korban Pesach. But Rabbeinu Bachai, in his commentary on Shema, connects these two mitzvahs from a different perspective. And he writes that the two mitzvahs involved here, the blood of the Bris Milah and the blood of the Korban Pesach, create the right environment for redemption. Bris Milah and Korban Pesach equals redemption. And he writes, amazing what he writes here. This is in chapter 12 of Shema, chapter 12, verse 48. It says there, somebody will tell me in a second. Precious bow. No, that. It says, V'chi yogur itcha ger. And should a ger, a convert, reside with you? Not a convert. It means a ger social. Somebody who lived, the non-Jews who lived in the land of Israel. V'chi yogur itcha ger. If a ger resides with you, also Pesach Lashem, and he makes the Korban Pesach to God. He molo called Zohar. All his male children should be circumcised. But Oz Yikrav Lasosa, and then he may approach and make the Korban Pesach. The Hoyika Ezra Ha'oretz, and he will be like a native of the land. He will be like he was Jewish. But the Kol Orel Lo Yochol Bo. But no uncircumcised person may eat from the Korban Pesach. Rabbeinu Bachai here. Before Orel Lo Yochol Bo, no uncircumcised male is allowed to eat from the Korban Pesach. So he says this verse shows or proves that Moshe Rabbeinu ensured that all the Jewish people that lived in the land of Israel, lived in Egypt, that were enslaved in Egypt, all the males had Bris Milah before they left Egypt, because they brought the Korban Pesach, and you can't bring a Korban Pesach without having Bris Milah. And he says, concerning this Bris Milah, this circumcision, the fact that all the Jewish children, all the males in Egypt had a Bris Milah, he quotes from the filter, that God gave the Jewish people two commandments by the merit of which they were redeemed. The blood of the Bris Milah and the blood of the Korban Pesach, which is immortalized, he writes these words, immortalized by Yechezkel. I saw you wallowing in your blood, and I said to you, by the blood you shall live, by the blood you shall live. That is why the Torah writes in Egypt, after the prohibition of uncircumcised males participating in the eating of the Korban Pesach, immediately it says, "Vayasu kol b'nei Yisrael kasher tzivah Hashem es Moshe ve'es Aaron kainasu," and all the children of Israel did as God commanded Moshe and Aaron, so they did. Says Rabbeinu Bachai, "Vayasu kol b'nei Yisrael." Everyone in Egypt made sure they had a Bris Milah so that everyone could take part in the Korban Pesach before they left Egypt. In those merits of those two mitzvahs, basically the only ones they had accumulated during that period of enslavement in Egypt, they were redeemed. And he says earlier in the same chapter, in Shemot, in chapter 12 of Shemot, in verse 28, we have a similar statement from God, with one exception. It says, "Vayelchu b'nei Yisrael, vayelchu b'nei Yisrael, kasher tzivah Hashem es Moshe ve'es Aaron kein osu." That the children of Israel went and did as God commanded Moshe and Aaron, and they did it. So Rabbeinu Bachai notices in this verse, above the word in the verse I've just quoted, that the words kol, the word kol B'nai Yisrael is missing, the word kol from verse 50 has been replaced with merely the words Vayasu B'nai Yisrael, because at that time not everyone had had a Brit Milah. So it starts by saying Vayas, they some of them were going to do it, but at the time that they were told to bring the Korban Pesach, the pasuk changes. The God repeats the verse Vayasu Kol B'nai Yisrael. So originally it says Vayasu B'nai Yisrael. Some of them did it, but when he gave the order for the Korban Pesach to be brought, and the fact that they couldn't bring it without being circumcised, then the Torah introduces the extra word Kol Vayasu Kol B'nai Yisrael. So that's, so from there we know that at the time of the Exodus from Egypt, everyone participated in the Korban Pesach, and the reason why everyone was participating in the Korban Pesach was that everyone had had a Brit Milah, and on that basis, they were eligible to be redeemed because of this pasuk in Yechezkel, everyone had a Brit Milah, and what happened was that all those that left Egypt left with a Brit Milah, but during the desert experience, during the 40 years in the desert, there was no Brit Milah. What happened was, when they arrived in the land of Israel, they had to have a Brit Milah, but all the males had to have a Brit Milah. So all the males that were born in the desert had to have a Brit Milah. There was obviously no circumcision taking place during the 40 years they were in the desert. As a result of that, there was no Pesach in the 40 years that were in the desert. But Yehoshua reminds us in chapter 5 of the book of his book, in the book of Yehoshua, of the fact that everybody, every male that left Egypt was circumcised and took part in the Korban Pesach. And this is Yehoshua chapter 5, verse 5. All the people that left Egypt were circumcised. But all the people who are born in the desert, during the desert, the 40 years desert experience, were not circumcised. So, says Rabbeinu Bachai, the very fact that we have this word kol, Vayasu kol B'nai Yisrael, when the Jewish people heard that God wanted them to bring a Korban Pesach, and they realized that some of them hadn't yet been circumcised, they all made sure they were circumcised, and they all took part in the Korban Pesach, and that's why God says, V'omer lo b'domai chayi, I'm going to redeem you, b'domai chayi, with the blood of circumcision, that's your merit, V'omer lo b'domai chayi, and I'm going to redeem you because of the blood of the Korban Pesach that you brought in Egypt. Those were the only two merits they had, and God took, so to speak, pity on them and redeemed them on the basis of those two mitzvahs. Now, what's very interesting here, I'm just going to give you some perspectives on Brit Milah and the Korban Pesach here, one from a perspective of a religious Zionist, one from the perspective of a Ethiopian Jew, an Ethiopian rabbi, and one from the perspective of the Boston Areva, Hasidisha approach to this idea of the importance to the Jewish people of Brit Milah and the importance to the Jewish people of the Korban Pesach, how powerful they are in our traditions. Now, what's very interesting about Judaism is, well, certainly until very recently, it didn't matter really how religious you were. Everybody had their son circumcised. And one of the amazing things about Israel as well is that almost everybody in Israel has some interaction with Seder, with the idea of Pesach and the Seder. You know, they might have a cookout and a barbecue on Yom Kippur, but everybody knows about the Haggadah. Everybody knows about the Exodus from Egypt. Everybody knows about Pesach. These are the two things, Brit Milah and Pesach, that seem to be the the foundations of two of the foundations of Shabbat as well, but these two things seem to be the foundations of Judaism. Why did we stop eating lamb for Pesach? Oh, complicated story. Who asked that question? Why did we stop eating lamb on Pesach? All right, I'm not planning to deal with that just now. So I just want to give you some perspectives. This is the first one, is from Rebbe, and gives you an insight into God's attitude here, because God understood, so to speak. Of course, he understood, but God, so to speak, recognized that the two of the pillars, the foundations of the Jewish people throughout the ages, that would keep them apart and keep them alive and ensure the survival of the Jewish people, obviously apart from Shabbos, was the Brit Milah and the Korban Pesach, or the idea of Pesach, the idea of the Seinonites and remembering the Exodus from Egypt. So the first is Rabbi Eliezer Melamed. He's I wouldn't say he's modern Orthodox, but he is certainly a religious Zionist rabbi. He wrote a fantastic sefer called Panine Halacha, Inside Halacha, and he writes the following. This is my translation. He didn't write in English, but my translation. He says, an important principle that emerges from the commandments of Brit Milah, circumcision, is that being a Jew is not easy. The Jewish life involves self-sacrifice, and from this the reality of life is revealed, which contains the recipe for the perfection of the world, the job of the Jewish people, which is Tikkun Olam, to create the conditions that the world can perfect itself. And as it is said in the verse that we mention in the Brit Milah ceremony, in the circumcision ceremony, that God said to the Jewish people via Yechezkel, in your blood you will live, in your blood you will live. The honorable vocation that the nation of Israel has taken upon itself to discover in a world of darkness and heresy that there is a creator and a leader to tell the people who are full of lust for murder and greed that the true calling of life is to pursue righteousness and kindness and not to live in a world of lies and hypocrisy. A life of purity and morality is not an easy job. It is a role that will only be complete in the finality of the world's perfection. The road that leads there is lined with difficulties and sacrifices. The removal of the foreskin, which expresses our rejection of the moral defects that clings to this physical world, involves suffering and blood. No one knows this more than the Jewish people. But there is no other way, because the other option is for us to compromise and become entrenched in the filth of the nations that are flooded with murder, violence, sexual perversion, and materialism. If we succumb to this, we'll be losing our value and our national identity. From every page of Jewish history, from the destruction of the temples to the Holocaust, we have learned that our job as Jews is tremendously difficult, challenging, and involves real dedication, and often involves the shedding of our own dearest blood in the name of a higher purpose, something we call Kiddush Hashem, sanctifying God's name. But remember, this is our destiny. Sometimes we have to sacrifice our blood for a higher purpose, to create the circumstances for the perfection of the world and Tikkun Olam. That's a beautiful piece, representative of what Brit Milah means to us. Second perspective is a beautiful piece written by a Rav, modern Orthodox Rav, interestingly. So his new name is Rabbi David Sharon. He was born Zawadeh Tasfe in a Jewish community in northern Ethiopia in 1973. He came to live in Israel as part of the group that the Falashes that came here. He went through Atopos Dan Brit, through some type of conversion, and then he became a Rav. He's got really, really good smicha, and he wrote a sefer called Misinai to Ethiopia, from Sinai to Ethiopia. Anyone that wants a book where they can cry, they want to get emotional and cry, they should buy this book, from Sinai to Ethiopia. there's tears on every page. And this is his piece on what the Bris Mila meant to the people of Ethiopia. It says, to us, Bris Mila is the first commandment given to our father Abraham in Bereshit in chapter 17. Although we perform all our mitzvahs primarily because they were given to us on Mount Sinai by God, the mitzvah of Bris Mila is repeated in the chapter on the new mother's sacrifice. In other words, when a new mother gives birth in Vayikra, in Parashat Tazria, we're told that Vayom Hashmini Yimol Basar Alosa, that when a woman gives birth to a newborn baby boy, it's a happy time. But don't forget the most important thing. The most important thing is on the eighth day, you have to circumcise it. Something that the Jews of Ethiopia were absolutely committed to for millennia. The Torah defines this as a bris, as a covenant, as an arrangement, as an agreement, as a promise between God and Abraham and his descendants. Ba'akimosiyas brisi b'ni uveinapal uveinzarapar aparepal adorosom the bris alon. I will establish, God says, my bris between me and between you and between your descendants after you throughout generations on an everlasting covenant, an everlasting bris. This bris is not only with the people, but as far as we were concerned, it is also a bris, a covenant between us and the land of Israel as well, as the verses in Bereshit describe. V'nosati l'cha ulizar, God talking to Abraham. V'nosati l'cha ulizarecha aparecha, I'll give you and your descendants after you, as Eretz Megurecha, the land of your travels. It's called Eretz Canaan Achuzat Olam, the entire land of Canaan, as an everlasting possession. V'yisa v'yisi lohem l'lohim, and I will be to them, to the Jewish people as a God. V'yomer lohim al Avram, and God said to Avram, v'ata es brisi tishmar, the condition is my bris mila, you will keep. V'ata es brisi tishmar, ata v'zarecha aparecha l'dor yosah, this land is yours, but the deal is, it's yours only if you keep the bris, if you keep the covenant, if you keep the bris mila. Zos brisi, says God, this is my bris, this is my covenant. Asher tishmeru b'ni u'b'inchem u'b'inzarecha aparecha, which you must observe to keep hold of the land. It will be between me and between you and all your descendants. Himol lochem kol boso, but every male among you must be circumcised. That is your lease upon this land. And says this Rav David Sharon, he says, this is the light. These verses were the light that kept the Jewish community in Ethiopia going. The belief that if we kept the Bris Mila for all those generations, we would eventually be returned to the land of Israel. And as it turns out, that was the case. And he says, as you see from these verses above, the mitzvah of Bris Mila and our claim to the land of Israel are inextricably linked. Furthermore, whether a person is a Jew does not depend on performing a bris, but rather on birth to a Jewish mother. But a Jew who is not circumcised, as I mentioned before, is punished by Koresh, by being divinely cut off from one's people. Abraham's acceptance of this covenant, this bris, this agreement, this deal, this eternal agreement with God, marks the beginning of the Jewish people. And since then, it has served as a central symbol of Jewish identity and consciousness for the entire nation, wherever they were, whether they were in Africa or in Europe, for which Jews have given, again, he mentions this idea that Rabbi Melamed mentioned, for which Jews have given their lives during periods of anti-Jewish decrees and persecution. Bris Mila occupies a leading position in the Jewish system of mitzvot. It is unique in that it is the only mitzvah that changes the body from the form in which it was born. The pages of Jewish history in Israel and around the world, and certainly in our homeland of Ethiopia, are saturated with the blood of those who kept this mitzvah. as recorded in Jewish chronicles from Hellenistic times, from the times of the Bar Kokhba revolt, and from the times of the Spanish Inquisition, right through to the Holocaust and the communist regime. The Book of the Maccabees describes the punishment of Jewish mothers who kept the mitzvah of Bris Milah. And he quotes the story there from the Book of Maccabees. It's really, you know, it's a Sefer Chitzoni. It's not part of the Tanakh. But he quotes the story that two women were arrested for having circumcised their children by descendants of the Hashmonaim, who turned out to be wicked descendants of the Hashmonaim, that has the name of the Maccabees. And these women were arrested for having circumcised their children, which was against the law. If you can believe that, in the land of Israel, they were publicly paraded about the city of Jerusalem with their babies hanging at their breasts, and then they were thrown down from the top of the city wall. Our dedication, the dedication of the Jewish people to the Bris Milah, serves as a credit to our forefathers and ourselves. It's the secret of the eternal existence and the continued life of the Jewish people. As Yechezkel promised, it would be. When he said, that through the blood of circumcision, through the blood of Korban Pesach, the Jewish people will live. Which is just, you know, and I say, if you want to read a book, you want to cry on every page, this is the book for you. I'll just tell you what it's called. It's called from Misinai to Ethiopia. It's in Hebrew, but the Hebrew is very easy to read. From Sinai, I don't know if it's in English, from Sinai to Ethiopia. It's a wonderful book. And finally, we've done everything, right? We've done a religious Zionist approach. We've had the approach of the Ethiopian Jews to Bris Milah. Now, I'm going to tell you something from the Boston Rebbe. The Boston Rebbe makes an observation that no one else seems to make in our verse. He says, he wrote an essay about the Jewish response to suffering, which of course has been a feature of Jewish life for 3,000 years. From one country of suffering to the next. So the Boston Rebbe quotes our verse. He says, God says, God says, in your blood you will live, in your blood you will live. Says the Boston Rebbe, B'domayich is plural. The word B'domayich doesn't mean in your blood you will live. B'domayich chayi means in your blood you will live. He says, so if it's mentioned twice in the verse, V'omaloch b'domai chayi, V'omaloch b'domai chayi, it doesn't represent two types of blood. The implication is that there are four types of blood by which our relationship with God is formed. He says, now we know from the Gemara in Croesus, which I've already quoted to you, that the first two bloods are easy. The blood of the Bris Milah, we as the Jewish people survive through the blood of the Bris Milah, and the Jewish people survive through the blood of the Korban Pesach, by keeping Pesach, by Sifrei Yetzias Mitzrayim, by recording in the Haggadah and Leil Shimurim on Seder night, recalling the Exodus from Egypt. And both these mitzvahs, as we just discussed, forged the Israelites into a nation under God's providence. But what are the other two bloods Yechezkel is referring to? The Domai Chayi, Domai is two, or it's plural. And the Domai Chayi is plural as well. So what's the extra blood here? What are we missing here? So the boss, this is really fastidious stuff. Very unlike me, but it's just beautiful from the Boston Rebbe. He said, when Aaron's two sons, Nadab and Avihu, we all know the story, they were slated to be the next Kohanim, Kohane Gadol, after the death of Aaron, but they died after offering a Eish Zara. They offered a strange fire And the Torah describes Aaron's response to the death of his two sons. He says the Boston rather, what does the Torah say? The Torah says, by Yidon Aaron, and Aaron was silent. That he accepted God's judgment in silence. And the Torah uses a word from the word, the root of the word for blood, by Yidon, that he kept silent. Now the word by Yidon has got its root in the word dam, blood. Says the Boston Rebbe like this: one way of dealing with suffering is the Aaron way, to be silent and accept God's judgment as part of truth. As part of Emes, Baruch dying her Emes. Aaron accepted the death of his son, and so have the Jewish nation throughout our history accepted it. The persecution, the murder, the Holocaust, and everything, all the oppression and persecution we've gone through the millennia. We have suffered terribly, right up until the latest tragedy of the Holocaust, and had the power and perseverance to accept God's judgment and still move forward. And he quotes the Prophet Chaim and Rabbi Elia Lopian, my Rebbe's grandfather, and Rabbi Hanan Bosserman, that at the time of the Mashiach, the tragedies that will strike the Jewish people will be so horrendous, and our only response will be by Yidol, from the language of blood, the blood of the Jewish people. At the time of the Mashiach will be shed like water, and the response of the Jewish people will have to be by Yidol, that we accept God's judgment. And here we are, 3 months after October the 7th, we know exactly what this word means. In the Messianic era, terrible tragedies will strike the Jewish people, and the only response can be to God by Yidol, to accept it from the language of blood. He says, but don't confuse accepting God's harsh judgment with being fatalistic about the future. Any time we see the blood of the Jewish people spilt, we can avoid it in the future. The future can always be changed. The past is gone. By Yidol, we're silent about the past. We accept God's judgment. Our job is to look to the future, about making sure our commitment to God and the Torah is rock solid, and that is the only way to mitigate suffering. Okay, so those are the words of, those are the words, that's B'domai Chayi, B'domai Chayi, lot to think about there. So God passed over the foundling, and he says, you know, you've got two mitzvahs, just taking the simple pshat of the pasuk of the verse, of verse 6. God says, I found you in the field where the Egyptians had cast you, covered in blood, crying as a newborn child, and I took pity on you. And God now continues with the allegory of the birth of the Jewish nation, and again, God chooses to use something we say in Haggadah, that straight after we mentioned the idea of the Bismillah and the Korban Pesach of the Seder night, we continue with the next verse, which is verse 7. Ravava, this is in the Haggadah again, Ravava Kitzemach HaSodah Nesach, is verse 7. Ravava Kitzemach HaSodah Nesachir, I let you thrive like a blossom in the field. This is God after he's found the foundling, after he's found the Jewish people, desperate, blooded in the field. I let you thrive like a blossom in the field. Batirbi, batigdili, batavoi, badiadoi. And you grew and reached adulthood, and you became perfectly beautiful. Shodayim nochonu, with fashion, beautiful, firm breasts. Usarech Someach, and your pubic hair grew, va'at eram ve'ariyah, but you were still naked and bare and unclothed. Such is a beautiful poetic verse. God is describing the fact that he's now picking the Jewish people up. He's found the baby in the field, and he's picking the baby up, and he's going to clean the baby up, and he's going to allow the baby to thrive. He's going to allow the baby to, the Jewish people to thrive, so that they can reach adulthood, just like the baby can reach adulthood. And that's going to form the exactly what this verse means, or what he's talking about here, the idea of redemption, and why the idea of breasts and sexual organs and pubic hair and nakedness, what has this all got to do with us, and why is it part of the allegory? That we'll discover all about all of that next week, please God. Amazing stuff coming up, not to be missed. This allegory is one of the great allegories of the Tanakh, and we'll pick up again next week discussing the growth of the Jewish people, so the way they grew at the point of redemption from Egypt. So, unless anybody's got any questions, we'll suspend and pick up, please God, same time, same place, next Monday afternoon. I wish you all a good week, a Shavuot Tov, a Yom Tov. And I hope you enjoyed the Shia, and I enjoyed giving it. And we'll pick up with verses, strange verse again that we say in the Haggadah every year. And this year, when it comes to Pesach this year, you'll understand what it's, what you already understand what the power of the previous verse, which we say in the Haggadah. And now you're going to understand the power of the next verse, which we say in the Haggadah. Please God, next week. Kol Tov to everybody. And I'll see you next week, Kol Tov.
Thank you.
See you later, Harry.
Bye bye.